go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 82 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. Something's been on my mind the last couple days, and so I'm going to talk about it. If you may notice, we have Maui. He's in the studio again. He'll be in this episode, maybe next episode as well. Hopefully he does not drown in the pool. I don't think he will, because we have a cover on the pool that claims that it can hold an elephant, the weight of an elephant. We've never put that to the test, but that's the claim the cover company has made. So I think they can hold a golden retriever. I think, how much does Maui weigh? Maybe 120. He's a little chubby. I call him the gobbler because he's got this. You can't really tell because his face is in my crotch right now. But he does have this gobbler neck thing where it's just fat on his neck. So it reminds me of a turkey, so I call him the gobbler. And he always has these eye boogers that I always have to pick out of his eyes. Okay, enough about Maui. Enough with him at the putting fur all shedding all over my one pair of jeans. Let's get back into the episode. What's on my mind is right around the corner from where the B-Man lives, there is a cycling studio. Now, my thoughts when it came to what's the main cycling studio that's super popular? This is not the one around the corner for me, is not that. But because of Dave Portnoy and the Barstool crew, I've always been under the impression, the stereotype I have when it comes to SoulCycle, that's it, is that the female babe instructors fuck the students and vice versa. But I was there at this studio around the corner from me the other night. It was 6-7 o'clock. So, you know, main cycling hours post work. And there were a lot of guys waiting outside the studio to get into the class, much more than I would suspect if I had never seen this. And it was off-putting to me, the B-Man, because I know why they're there, and they are not there for the right reason. All these guys are there. And the reason why I know they're not there for the right reason is because if you're a guy and you're a cyclist, you're not going to SoulCycle or to one of these off-brain cycle indoor studio classes post your day job. You go out early Saturday morning on the weekend. You put on all the tight gear with the aerodynamic helmet and the silly glasses, and you got the shoes on that clamp, clamp, clamp when you go to coffee cafe afterwards. But they click into the whatever the things you put your feet on. That guys doing that, although they are annoying, they're cycling for the right reason. They're doing it for the love of the game. They're doing it to get their PR, their best record. They're doing it because they just love doing tens, maybe even hundreds of miles on real road next to vehicles that they should be in. But the guys at this studio around the corner from the B-Man, they were there. They were there. I know why they're there. And they're not there to get a workout. They're there to try to meet babes who are cycling there. And that, while I'm okay with guys going out and trying to find a unique way to get in the pants of a babe, or shall I say the yoga pants of a babe, especially one who's athletic and fit and does cycling, I don't like the manner in which they're going about it. When I say they, I mean the Johns at this cycling class. Because they're not being honest with their intentions. And that, to me, I need honesty from people. That's a big thing with the B-Man. And they're trying to backdoor their way into the yoga pants of these female cyclists. And that's a big no-no for me. I'm a big direct game. I go up to a babe, tell her she looks hot. Do you want to fuck? Let's go back to my Camry. Just like, be direct. Don't do it. Hey, what time is it? Or what breed is your dog? And then you kind of slide your way into the conversation. No, I just spread my legs and go, I got a dick, two balls, you got a vagina. You want to bump them together and fall in love. That's how the B-man is. But these guys, it is also why there have been times when I've gone on dates and the babe, obviously she won't like me, but it's like, hey, is there a polite way to put me down? It's like, hey, I really wasn't feeling it. How about we just be friends? And whenever I get that text, I automatically respond, no thanks. I have no interest in being platonic friends because I don't. How can you be friends with somebody that you want to face fuck? Like, if you want to skull fuck a person, I can't talk with you about your life without having the image of fucking that skull on my mind. So to me, like, I can't be friends with you because the friendship is based on a lie. I am being disingenuous to you. And as the female, hey, let's just be platonic friends, that you can't respect me. If you can't respect me, that we can't be friends. Because how can you respect me if you know I want to face fuck you, but I subdue those that urge to do so to remain in your orbit. That you have to look down upon me for hiding my true emotions. You can't respect me because I'm lying to your face. Same thing's going on at this cycling studio. Now, I didn't take a survey. I'm conjuring this up in my head, but I know because I am a pervy guy. I do know how pervy guys without great game think and work, and they're being disingenuous with their intentions. These cyclist studio guys, and they come there and they're all happy and they're all like trying to be talkative with all the desk ladies and all the other ladies with their squeeze bottles and their backpack and all the trendy athletic gear. And it's just everything about it is it's inauthentic. It's disingenuous. It's everything that stand-up comedy is not. Like, I love stand-up comedy because you get on stage. It's me, a microphone, and my thoughts. This ain't improv. This ain't sketch comedy. There's no show. It's me and the audience, and we're having at it. And I'm not hiding behind anything. I'm giving you my soul. I'm giving you my everything. And there's no facade. There's no facade here. And this cycling studio, the guys who are going to it, they're dripping. They're dripping with facade, and it gives me the heebie-jeebies, and I empathize with all the babes who are actually, they're there just because they want to do cycling, they want to have hot ass and burn some calories and do so in a dark studio with an uplifting instructor, but as they're trying to do that in a mostly female environment, you got all these creeps, all these Johns, hanger-ons just trying to, you know, sniff between your legs as you're up on two pedals, whatever you're doing in that studio, because I've never been in a cycling studio, but I can imagine I know what's going on in there. I hate that. There was something else about the cycling studio. Do you call it a studio, a workout room? I'm not even sure what. It's a cycling class building, brick and mortar. I don't even know what you call it. Let's move on. There was something else about the cycling that I do not, I take umbrage with. Oh, all those vocabulary words that I write down in my notes app. I was reading through them all last night, forgot them all. My memory is, it's jello, dude. I might have 50 vocabulary words. I might remember the definition of three of them, and it's probably the last three that were on the list, and they happen to be the most the most recent vocabulary words that I've input into my notes app. I name that note words I like. All right, I'm rambling. Let's get into this. The theme of this episode, episode 82, Learn How to Speak, is AI, artificial intelligence, as I wipe some golden retriever hair from my face. This one comes from a subreddit, Futurology, I believe that's how you pronounce it. Could AI companions be the future of relationships? ? I was thinking about the future of AI and how it could impact our relationships. Imagine a future where you could have an AI companion that is indistinguishable from a human, both physically and emotionally. They could be your perfect partner, always there to support you and love you. But what would the implications of this be? Would it lead to a stronger, more fulfilling relationships? Or would it create a new set of challenges and problems? I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this. Do you think AI companions could be the future of relationships? Why or why not? We need to bring back shame into society. I think that's one thing newly reelected President Trump brought to American culture was having no shame. That's the one thing President Trump had is that he has no shame. That is his superpower. And it's kind of creeped into the rest of American culture. We need to bring it back. We need to be able to shame people in our lives. And anybody who comes at you telling you, hell, you have an and one to a wedding. And as a date, you bring your AI babe. The rest of us in real world, whatever this is, we need to shame you for bringing an artificial intelligence lover as your date to a proper function. I remember when I was a child, maybe, I don't know, 8, 9 years old, I had an imaginary friend. I used to play in our front yard with him. I'd play soccer. I'd kick a ball. I'd always, I'd juke him. I'd juke my imaginary friend. I'd go around a tree. We had a fence. I'd make a fake net, and I'd kick it. And I'd play with him for an hour, half hour, just outside. Because we didn't have phones back then. So you actually had to go outside and exercise and play. But I would play soccer, sports games with him when none of my other friends were around. And the thing I never did was tell anybody about my imaginary friend. When I'd go to school, I'd play with my real friends there. You couldn't do anything to me back then to be honest about my imaginary friend, because I know, even back then as a 9-year-old, that if I told my real friends that I had an imaginary friend that I played soccer with sometimes in my front yard, I would get bullied and shamed and made fun of and kicked. And I wouldn't be able to show my face in school because I would get laughed at of the classroom. No one would play kickball with me at recess. No one would play Foursquare because nobody wants to play Foursquare with the loser that has an imaginary friend. Like, hey, there's 25 of us in 25 of us in this class. Like, we're all the same age. You can't be friends with any of us. You have to go find an imaginary friend because that's how weird and awkward you are. But fuck that. Fuck that. I didn't share that information with anybody till now that I'm 40 years old. And, I really don't know any of those real kids anymore. Same thing with AI girlfriends and boyfriends or lovers or companions, whatever sex gender you are. If you have one, good for you. Good for you, but that needs to remain in the closet. The gays back in the day, you had to stay in the closet. AI companions, keep them in the closet. I don't want to know about them. It's good if you do, but if you come out publicly telling me you have an AI lover, I'm going to give you the rock. I'm going to give you the eyebrow, the rock eyebrow. I'm going to give you the side eye look, and I'm going to talk shit behind your back for having an AI lover. So that's a promise. That is a B-man guarantee. The problem, though, with having an AI companion that's perfect, and now maybe this is lovey-dovey of me, the B-man, but it's the imperfections that I fall in love with. I love when you're with a babe and she has a pimple on her backside and you squeeze the pimple and the juice and the pus comes out. Or maybe she has freckles and you kind of draw lines with your finger between them. Or her teeth are a little bit crooked. Or maybe she mispronounces some words or she has some weird habits. Like, those are the things that make you fall in love. It's not the perfect. Like, I go to pornography for perfection. If I want a hot, busty Latina that's 27 years old that will do anything for me, or for the male porn star that I watch them do it, that's where I get my perfection. But in real life, I want the imperfections. I want the lady, the babe, who will just look at me with a perplexed look when I start pontificating about how dinosaurs don't exist, or how lizard people are ruling the world, or how entertaining the idea of flat earth, and all these weird things that I talk about. Like, I need a babe who gives me this, wait, what the fuck are you talking about right now? Like, shut the fuck up. Like, I need that in a partner. And an AI lover who's completely perfect, to me, that's boring. It's going to get so banal so quickly. There's nothing more than a yes man or yes ma'am. It's a yes person who just agrees with everything you do and the way you go about life. That's a snooze fest. I do not want to be in that type of dynamic relationship. So no, I don't like that. I need to argue. Like, I need a spike of emotions, right? Like, I need to have a hash it out, throwing glass against the wall. Not like me glass, but like a glass against. Like, I need to be able to yell at my baby. Go, like, why did you get me strawberry ice cream? I specifically said I wanted cookie dough ice cream. I always eat cookie dough ice cream when the choice is available. We've been together 7 years. And then you get me strawberry ice cream? What is wrong with you? I need that type of stupid argument with a lover. You're not going to get that with an AI artificial intelligence companion. That's why I am anti-AI. Because there's nothing. It's like the guys who go to the cycling studio to pick up babes. There's nothing tangible. There's nothing real about that. It's all inauthentic. And no. What I need is not an AI, companion. Well, what we need is an AI program that lets us know, lets all of us Johns know, the location of every babe within a 20-mile radius that is currently ovulating. That is the app, the AI app that needs to come to fruition. That is one that can help Johns like myself and maybe yourself as well. But an AI lover, while it probably will happen, I'm not looking forward to it. And neither should any of you. Let's go look at some photos. So for the last half hour, I've been trying to connect my audio program to my MacBook. Have not been able to do so. That means after this episode, I am going to have to attend YouTube University once again, try to figure out how to get that to work. I did drop my audio equipment during a move, so hopefully that didn't break. Otherwise, the audio in this episode might be a little fuzzy if I'm not able to work at that all out. So apologize if that doesn't work out when you're watching or listening to this. I want to say also, first segment we were talking, or I was talking, about how my mistrust of guys who go to the cycling classes after their day jobs. I don't know. This has been popping up in my algorithm. I've seen some headlines. Of course, I did not delve into the entire article. I read headlines only here at Verbal Graffiti. We don't do real research. But there have been these articles saying that, running groups are the new dating apps, that people desperate for love, connection, intimacy, deep conversations. They're attending running groups on Saturday and Sunday mornings to meet a lover, maybe their soulmate. I don't like this. Maybe I'm a curmudgeon. Maybe in my elder age, I don't like anything. But there's something. I run. To be a man, I'm very slender, skinny, skinny fat. These noodle arms. I do a lot. Chicken legs. All right, stop critiquing yourself, B man. But yeah, I do a lot of road running. And when I'm running, the last thing I want to do is talk to a hot babe that I'm sexually attracted to. Because when I run, I am. I'm oozing with sweat, like it's glistening. I stink. My armpits smell. It looks like I peed myself because I sweat so much that, like, right in my groin area, my shorts are all wet. Again, that's perspiration. It's not pee. I'm just pounding the pavement. I'm huffing and puffing. So the thought of trying to flirt with a babe in a running group as we're running across some city blocks, that might be the last place I'd want to try to mack on a stranger or a babe or someone out in public. So running groups for me are, hey, if you want to join a running group to make friends and to burn some calories and better your fitness, go ahead. But if you're specifically joining running groups to find your soulmate, go to a bar and get drunk. That's my advice. Do not get up at 7:30 and start running with strangers. That is no bueno. Do not like that. That would not be the avenue I would take. Also, I want to say that I'm not positive, but I was looking outside a little earlier and it looks like a full moon. And I don't know if any of you know this, but when it is a full moon, you're allowed to drive drunk past midnight and the police cannot give you a DUI. That is on the law book. So if you're going out drinking tonight, once the clock hits midnight, if there is a full moon, you could drive home drunk. And if the police pull you over, suspecting you of being intoxicated, they cannot charge you with a DUI and have to let you off and drive home intoxicated. So, hey, if you're out tonight or whenever there's a full moon, throw back a couple more extra because the police cannot charge you with that. That is complete fabrication, but it is a lie. I do like to tell when I'm out on doing stand-up while there's a full moon. I don't drink while doing stand-up, but many audience members do. So that's a little inside joke. I giggle when I tell strangers that, and they're like, "What, is that real?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's on the books. Like, go look it up." And the great thing is, I don't think anybody knows where to look up laws. Like, whatever state you're in, I guess if I ever wanted to figure out a law, I live in Connecticut. I would just Google Connecticut drinking laws or domestic violence laws or whatever, the contract laws, whatever law. I just Google where location, what are the statutes, what are all the things on the books. But I don't really know where to look up laws, and I don't think I'm the only one who doesn't know how to do so, because I've been to the library. I don't see a big book, you know, a big encyclopedia showing me what I'm allowed and not allowed to do on the streets of Connecticut. So, yeah, just make up some laws, tell some strangers when you're out, and have some fun of it. And maybe it does remind me of a time when my who was it? My oldest sister, my brother Kevin, told my sister Carrie when they were teenagers that if you go to a stop sign and there's a white line like right in front of the stop sign, like on the pavement, that means the stop sign is optional. So anytime you see that white line on the pavement, you can stop or you can just blow off the stop sign. And of course, that white line is at every stop sign. So it really fucked up my sister's head thinking that no stop signs were actually stop signs. But again, that's what siblings do. We fuck with each other. So when you go out, make up a law, tell the guy or the gal at the stool next to you and go home giggling to yourself. With all that foolishness out of the way, let's continue with verbal graffiti. Again, theme of episode 82 is AI, artificial intelligence. Again, comes from the subreddit Futurology. South Korea unveils world's first autonomous amphibious robotic missile launcher. Whoa, that sounds serious. A lightweight, unmanned, and amphibious. Some people say that about the B-Man. South Korea's Hanwha Aerospace has officially unveiled its proposal for a novel robotic amphibious, learn how to say that word, missile launcher vehicle. Previewed at the Korea Army International Defense Exhibition, KADEX for short, 2024, this new missile system will be designed to provide maximum fire support with minimal manpower. The new missile system is unmanned by design and can fire multiple rockets from previously unreachable areas. Being unmanned, the rocket system will maximize crew survivability and be useful for high-risk combat deployment. We dramatically improved survivability by removing personnel from the launch area. The unmanned approach allows for safer operations in high-risk scenarios, Hawa added. A lot of big words with that one. A lot of big vocabulary words that I'm not exactly sure what the meaning of all those words are. I do know without even knowing the definition at all those words together means a lot of destruction. And that makes the hair on my arms, gives me a little bit of goosebumps. It's terrifying. Now, oddly enough, since I'm not sure if this is true, but I did read in actually a real book somewhere, this wasn't just scrolling through X, that since the introduction of the atomic bomb in World War II, fewer people have died in combat post-World War II than 1990 through the two atomic bombs that the U.S. dropped on Japan. So the first half of the 20th century, fewer combat deaths than post-World War II through 2000, maybe today. Which is, when you hear that stat, that did throw me back a bit, because you think with all the technology, especially with missiles and defense and weapons, you think that's the capability of mass destruction, that there would be more death and destruction and loss of human life with all these new weapons. But in fact, it has not come to fruition. So that is, although that is true, one of these bombs, one of these new missiles, maybe this amphibious South Korean underground shooting through the ocean, maybe that will be the one to just blow up more people than died during D-Day. It's we're tempting fate with all these new weapons, and it's terrifying. And the B-Man, I am a pussy. I'm saying right now, if World War III does pop off with Russia or China or whatever nation, Iran, I will be the first one. I will be leading. To be man, I am not a leader, but I will be running towards the Canadian border. I am not going to go fight. I have my hands hurt. I don't have great endurance. I don't. I don't. I'm kind of skinny. I don't want to get shot with a bullet. Again, I'm a pussy. So I am going to run from the opposite direction of the officers that are telling me I need to go fight. So maybe I'm a bit... Maybe what I'm about to say makes me a hypocrite. And yes, it does. But I'm okay being a hypocrite. In this case, if you're going to make some AI missile that can blow up half the world underwater, yeah. Of all the things to complain about, the B-Man being a hypocrite, there are far greater, graver things to worry about than me talking out of my ass. But it is just a thing. Like, if I had to be in war, in combat, I have a soft spot in my heart for Dwight Eisenhower. I don't know why it is, but if some president told me, "Hey, you got to go fight in this war for America." Now I know I'm a sacrificial lamb. I'm not one of the lizard people. I'm just a pawn on the board. Whether I die or live, they don't give a fuck. The lizard people, the higher ups, the president, whoever it may be, whatever year. But I do feel if I had to go fight in that war, like I feel as though I deserve to be able to look at my executioner in the eyes while he shoves his bayonet into my stomach and I take my last breath. I deserve to see my killer face to face, eye to eye. That's why I've always been a bit queasy of snipers. Now, during... what's the movie? Saving Private Ryan, my favorite character, I forget his name, but he was a sniper. He was the one like, on top of the church. He would say a prayer or a line from the Bible. Say a line. And he was just popping people off till obviously the tank came and blew his face off. But so it was a little dichotomy there. But there's something about a sniper being able to kill somebody, a target like a mile away, and like that person gets shot, dies without being able to see the sniper in the tree from 5,000 meters away. There's something about that that doesn't sit well with me. So and this amphibious missile, underwater South Korean weapon, that is like a sniper on like the highest level of HGH steroids gear that you can take. If I'm going to fight in combat, I do not want to be dying at the hands of some chemical engineer pressing enter on a keyboard 25,000 miles away in a land I've never seen. I want to be eye to eye. You know, we shit on, what was the word? The Revolutionary War, you know, where we would have the drummers would like introduce everyone into battle, and the red coats and the blue coats, they would walk in line. They wouldn't hide behind trees. There was something honorable about that. Well, and strategy wise, terrible, fucking terrible. I mean, you get routed if you did that today. But walking, face to face. They're walking in a line saying, "Hey, we're going into battle. We're right here. You're right there. Let's load up and have at each other." That's a more honorable combat than playing esports with AI programs and blowing us up from some drone from 10,000 feet in air. And there's also, I'm a bit of a hypocrite because I have a soft spot in my heart, and I'm a sucker for war movies, all of them. Saving Private Ryan, 1917, Platoon, Apocalypse Now, All Along the Western Front, or whatever the fuck the name of that movie is, Stripes, a comedy version of a war movie. Any war movie, even if it has subtitles, I can watch it. Tim O'Brien's The Things They Slept On, that was one of my favorite novels that I read when I was younger. Tim O'Brien fought, or he was in the Vietnam War, and he writes historical fiction. A lot of his novels are from Vietnam War, and since he was there, like, they're very real-esque. So I think you get these war. The reason why these, a lot of art, the greatest art comes from human suffering. And the most heinous human suffering oftentimes comes because of war. So these two things, war and art, go hand in hand. And I enjoy one without having to partake in the other. So that's why I do think, coming full circle, this is why I'm a hypocrite. Because I love these war movies. I love these war novels. I love reading letters that warriors have written to loved ones while they were out fighting in a different land. Like, there's the paintings that come. They just go to any museum and all that. You go to the Yale Art Gallery. They got paintings of George Washington crossing the Delaware River. So there's so much art comes from the blood shed during war. You know, what is, and if we replace all that bloodshed with AI robots fighting each other, we're not going to get any art from that. And I know that's maybe the last thing you should be bitching about when it comes to AI blowing up the world. But that is something I think about, and something I don't want the way to war to go. Just some nerds playing Battleship, and there's actually no humans involved. War needs to have bloodshed. It needs to have a detached arm floating along the ocean coastline. We need human suffering, or else we're not going to get a great poem from it. There's going to be no great literature that comes from some South Korean AI missile. Those two, I love Game of Thrones. One of my favorite series of all time. I know people bitch about the last season. It wasn't the best, but it's still better than most shit that's on TV and streaming networks. But the thing is, I loved the politicking in Game of Thrones. That's what drew me to the series. That and a lot of the boobs in the first season. But give me Jon Snow pulling out his sword against an entire cavalry group coming at him versus that floozy with three dragons who just throws fire on entire islands of groups of people. Because I can't relate to the latter. When you're doing some voodoo magic, throwing smoke out of your vagina and fire out of your dragons, and people are levitating and all that magic and the dogs that had special powers. That's not part of humanity. I don't have that, so I can't relate to it. But when Littlefinger is backstabbing people, and the dwarf, what's his name in the show? Peter Dinklage, whatever his name is, and when he's pulling strings and trying to get people to go from one island to the next, arranged marriages to strengthen families and combat groups, I can relate to that because that's human interaction. But again, with the dragons or in real life with the AI missiles, it's very cold. It's not tangible to me, to use that word twice in one episode. I can't touch it. I can't feel it. It's almost like I can't even comprehend it. Now, when you see a hurricane, we had that hurricane in North Carolina that just, there were mudslides and flooding just entire communities. You see images of it, but I wasn't there and I've never experienced that. So I can't, I could see it, but I can't really feel it because it's almost incomprehensible, even though I'm watching it. Same thing with AI. So I really hope we go back to having some honor and fighting hand-to-hand combat, eye-to-eye. Let's fight to the death and see each other as we die, not with some missile that I can't even pronounce the name of. Now, To the final segment, we are going to continue reading The Salesman's Wife by John Lawrence. We are now on page, top of 31. We will read two pages if you're reading along. Ah, then you're practically newlyweds. Yes, Pamela had already begun to feel more relaxed. Somehow the doctor's reassuring tone made her feel less terrified of revealing her private problems to a near stranger. Dr. Carlsberg, she said suddenly, do you think you can help me? That depends, he replied evenly. On what? On how willing you are to free yourself, how willing you are to fully the joys of Euros so that you and your husband can find true fulfillment together. Oh, doctor, I want that so badly. Why don't you call me Justin, he said, like to keep things on a more informal basis than most doctors. In fact, you'll find some of my methods may be rather informal, even unorthodox. There are those who don't have the strength required for my therapy. Therapy? The young wife asked. What kind of therapy do you mean? It's what I call love therapy, he replied. What I mean is simply this. Most of my patients suffer from deep-rooted sexual inhibitions which they cannot break through. Pamela's heart leapt with happiness at his words, for he was outlining her very problem. She felt sure she had come to the right person. She listened intently as he continued. Through my method of treatment, the patient learns to surrender to enjoy love, to submit in bliss to the power of love. Love is the only thing that can save the world, Pamela. Love. And if you have the courage, you can learn to love. Love fully. Would you like that? Oh, yes, she said with eagerness. Yes. Good. Then perhaps we can begin. I'm afraid that first, however, we must talk about the financial arrangements. Pamela started slightly, for up until now, she hadn't even thought about the fact that her visits might require payment. How much will it cost? She inquired. That depends on how many visits you wish. The first visit is free, so that you can see the sort of work I do. Then you can come as often as you like, but each visit will cost $70. Although it's a large sum, Pamela felt that if she could be helped, $70 was not too much to pay, particularly if she didn't have to come too frequently. Although she knew she should discuss it with Alan first, it seemed more important to make the step now, to see if she couldn't progress before he returned from his run to San Francisco. That's all right, she said. I'll manage somehow.
Go suck a fat one.